Hello, Goblet of Wine, a drunken Harry Potter podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Charlie, and we're two 20-somethings rereading our favourite childhood book with added alcohol and cynicism.
In today's episode, we are reading chapter 14 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
So grab a glass and listen along on this drunken, reminiscent journey.
I...
What's wrong?
It's copying you. You sounded really sad, so I decided to copy you.
Oh my god.
I can't stop looking at myself in the viewfinder.
The camera is so wonky.
I know, I know, like, it's normally wonky, but it looks like we're on the Titanic. Also, my hair is coming up orange in the camera.
So, can you stop your phone? Like,
no, no. What do you mean you don't want that? It's Nikita, actually, so you're being rude.
So Hannah wants to be me in two ways today. In the first way, she asked me to dye her hair blonde. As you can see, that didn't go perfectly.
It's not blonde.
It's light. It's just we had to spontaneously buy a different toner because the one I told her to order didn't turn up.
I also think my hair just wants to be ginger.
Like, but it's really light.
Let it go.
It just needs the correct toner. But yeah, so she's dyed her hair blonde to be more like me. And the second way she's decided to be like me is, what have you done, Hannah?
I forgot my book with all my notes in.
She forgot her notes.
Yeah, I did, yeah. I've never done that before and I'm panicking a lot because I've got nothing.
Can you picture how smug I am right now? It's allowed. It's warranted.
What if I get home and realise I didn't say a point? I really... Oh, it's fine. I edit it. I'll voice note it in.
Haha. Or you could just go without saying a point.
No,
it's fine.
I must say every point I want to make on this podcast.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah, I thought I was okay, but now I'm like questioning that by how depressedly we said hello. Yeah, sounded like the what's his face from Hitchhiker's Guide, which you still need to watch. You genuinely, you will love it. Hannah's so sick of me being like, you need to watch this, you'll love it. But I am correct. Thing is, you love what's his face.
That's helpful. Cheers.
Martin Freeman.
I do love him.
She's the only person on the planet that likes Martin Freeman.
I've heard
he's
stop liking
definitely
him.
Horrible. Like, you could just tell the man has rancid vibes. She loves Martin Freeman and you'll just like it. It's like your kind of sense of humour. You will. You'll fucking love it.
Okay.
Neil agrees.
Okay.
Even though Neil is always wrong because he's a man. In fact, actually, Hannah forgetting her notes is actually Neil's fault.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's away this weekend, so he couldn't even bring them.
And that's rude.
So it's all Neil's fault, really. But either way, she wants to be me.
Yeah.
Like the Busted song.
Yeah, you...
She wants to
you
be...
You had a bob, so I grew my hair into a bob, and now I'm dyeing it blonde.
Yeah.
You know, I've just been dark for too long. It's time to go back to my natural colour, which currently is... Let's kindly call it sand colour.
It's giving housewife. It's giving I want to speak to the manager.
Just ignore it, guys. It'll be a different colour in two episodes' time.
Meanwhile, mine's also a weird colour because I bleached it, but I haven't toned it. So, you know, this is the episode of bad hair.
This is where that person that ranked us is going to move us from an 8 to a 6.
So, thing is, that does actually, like, kind of low-key, like, deep inside, I'm like, I want to be an 8, not a 6. Pick me.
Pick.
Choose me. Love me.
Grey's Anatomy references for you
there. We don't do that a lot.
Yeah, we don't do that many Grey's Anatomy references.
We don't, and we love Grey's Anatomy.
What other lines do we know? My favourite one is, there's intestines in my hand. I don't feel like that relates to
I've started watching The X-Files. I'm first of all obsessed, but also it has some of the best, worst dialogue in it. It's so funny. I swear to God, I watched an episode last night and someone was like, oh my God, floor 4's on fire. And someone went, that's where the children are. The children. You think of the children. Or she's dying.
Oh,
I was like,
God.
That has no reason to be funny. But it was, and it as well, because it's an American show, and the person that said, but that's where the children was like British. So it was like, that's where the children are. Like, yeah. Anyway.
That's us.
I really have that, like, I'm forgetting something feeling.
I've forgotten my notes, so I'm just living that feeling.
Yeah, that's it. I'm channeling you.
Should we do some top of the episode stuff? Do you know what we forgot to say at the top of this episode?
What?
We've been together all day because this morning we appeared on BBC Radio Berkshire.
We did.
To talk about Harry Potter.
Well, BBC South.
BBC South.
Yeah. Yeah, they made the mistake of being like, will you come on to talk about the Miriam Margulies, like what she said about Harry Potter fans needing to come on? And we were like, yes. And then like, 2 minutes in. I was like, so J.K. Rowling's a transphobe.
Yeah, they had to add a correction at the end of our segment.
To say that she's not a transphobe, which quite frankly is... Well, to say that
she doesn't call herself a transphobe. I was like, okay.
And it's like, yeah, racists don't call themselves racist.
Like, yeah, they literally had to add a correction, which we didn't hear because we were on air. We only realised when some friends were texting me like, haha, the ending really got me. And I was like, what about the ending? And then an hour later was flicking through the segment and was like, oh, that correction.
It's predictable. The BBC are evil. The only reason we did it, well, the only reason I did it was because I wanted to be able to call J.K. Rowling a transphobe on the BBC.
It was like a fun segment.
It was really fun, actually. The host was really good. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
It was fun.
Yeah, and if anyone's wondering, well, we'll leave a link to the segment, but we find Miriam Margolyes very funny and just found the comments funny.
Yeah, it's not that deep.
Don't get your knickers in a twist.
Yeah, it's not that serious.
That was pretty much our take.
Yeah.
We're saying a lot. Right, should we do some new patrons?
Yes.
A Jemima Puddle Duck. I feel like I've done that before.
Probably. It's fine. We repeat them all the time.
A Jemima Puddle Duck size thank you to Gemma.
An ant size thank you to Anthony. Also, oh my God, on a related to this, someone messaged us the other day. I think they must have been called like Hayley or something. We said a hailstorm size thank you to Hayley. At that moment, it started to hail.
We're actually witches. Yep. That's what you have to understand. A Jeroboa size thank you to Jumi.
A killer firestorm size thank you to Kirsty. I'm just testing if we are psychic.
That's a horrible thing to test.
We're really sorry if you're like now just currently dying in a killer firestorm, whatever that is. It's a storm that's killer because it's made of fire.
An Alex from Grey's Anatomy size thank you to Alex.
And a sausage size thank you to Samira, who has upgraded to a producer level.
I don't think they've upgraded. I think they joined us that.
Or, yeah. Well, you didn't specify, so...
I will actually always put the word upgrade.
Me, 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 me. Anyway, what do we do next? Oh, yeah, the question.
I was waiting for you to do it. I was like...
I'm so good at podcasting. Mm-hmm. I could not think of a question. Episodes always, like, they either have, like, so many questions where I'm like, it's hard to pick one, or there's nothing. And we had two episodes in a row of just nothing. So I basically was like, just chat to us about the episode. See ya. Says, I think we deserve a Patreon episode where you guys tell us about Misu and Todd, their likes and dislikes, origin stories, fave knack spots, and skills.
I'd be more than happy to record that.
Same.
For you.
All I do is talk about Todd. So
when we're together, we just talk about the cats, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. Todd's very upset today because I've had a housemate move in and he's like, Mum, who the fuck is this? Like this morning he literally said to me, was like, I don't know if you know, but someone else slept here last night. And I'm like, I know. She's gonna be doing that a lot.
Musu's really hungry at the moment, hungrier than usual.
Todd's taking off his winter coat, so it's just Todd hair everywhere.
Marie says, my stepdad went all out and put up a hammock in my room. Like Charlie, I also should have suspected I'm bi. I had Jared Leto and Jared Way posters, and Mum asked why I liked boys that look like girls. Sorry, what is the beginning related to? My stepdad
I think
went
about
all
teenage
out.
Bedrooms, but I do
get it. Okay,
love the implication that having a hammock makes you gay.
Yeah, I was actually like, a hammock's gay.
Honestly,
you can't just say everything you like is gay.
There's something definitely not straight about a hammock.
Okay.
Jason says, as someone that lives in Glasgow, just hearing the word buckfast triggered my fight or flight. Valid. Which one was it, though?
Charlie's
was
now
it fight or was it flight?
Charlie's now using her buck bottle as an aesthetic vase, so tell us how you feel about
it
that,
It is quite
Jason.
Aesthetic. I've got some, like, nice flowers in it. It's very cute.
Thank you for all your comments. Right, let's do the alcohol.
Yeah, Hannah, what are we drinking?
Well, Anthony has asked for something he's called Polyjuice Potion. A Polyjuice Potion asks that you mix equal parts vodka, clam juice, marinara sauce.
Also, isn't it marinara?
No, I was doing an American.
Okay.
And dirt. I've been perfecting the recipe for years, and now I serve it regularly at my dinner parties here in America. When I want a little extra kick, I'll throw in a few cloves of raw garlic, which has the added benefit of boosting my immune system.
Would you like your dirt? I went to the garden special. I feel like you could have grabbed the glass before.
I would like my dirt. Thank you. Enjoy this.
I don't, you know, it's fine. I've put worse things in my mouth.
It's the clams. The clams, not the dirt.
Really? It's the clams, not the dirt.
Yeah.
soily.
Yeah, so it's not real.
No. You try and trick us, we try and trick you. So yes, this lovely Anthony person decided to ask us to drink that, which is hilarious because they asked us to drink that and then later on was like, ha ha ha, just kidding. Hannah did not read the rest of the message.
I will skim read everything and anything. So I read it. Then the real alcohol that he put later, I thought that went in it too because I was skim reading it, screenshotted it, sent it to Charlie like, God, I've got to say no to this guy. And she just went, ha ha, that's so funny. And I was like,
yeah,
you've been asked to drink dirt. And then I read it again and was like, I get what's going on here.
I was like, we're actually, we can't drink dirt. That's not. So this was milk and hot chocolate powder.
He goes on to say, just kidding. I think you've been tortured enough already. So I will give you something nice to drink. Clem. I don't know why I said that with such a French accent. Creme de cacao and whipped cream vodka. This is one of the first things that I ever drank and was my first mixed drink. I don't remember what ratio we used, so feel free to experiment and adjust to your taste. Also, I just wanted to say thank you for making this podcast. I used to DoorDash full time, and this was one of the podcasts that helped me get through that. So I appreciate everything that you put into making this. Cheers to a great last season, and I hope you enjoy the drink. By the way, I mean whipped cream flavored vodka, not the whipped cream that's infused with vodka. Wait. What? Not the whipped cream that's infused with vodka. That exists? Where can we buy it?
This is actually quite nice. It's like a Nesquik. No, is it? I'm drinking the dirt drink. God, it was really nice.
I want the whipped cream that's infused with vodka. Where can I buy that?
Can we make that?
I don't know how.
Well, just get double cream, put some vodka in.
But I'm assuming, by the way he's phrased it, you buy it in a can, which is like a different type of whipped cream. Squirty cream.
Just chocolate Americans. Cheers. Yes.
It's like drinking a chocolate. Like a chocolate with a filling in.
Yes, it's very like the filling of like fancy chocolates.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, because it's fancy because it's got a bit of alcohol. Yeah.
Mm. Yes, good.
Very tasty. Thank you.
Yeah, I probably not with our acting skills, but I hope, Anthony, that we gave you a mini heart attack.
You're doing it. Because I messaged him back like, ha ha ha, you're hilarious. Mm. Thank you, Anthony, for that.
Yeah,
for being funny.
Ha ha ha.
Right, let's try to do this without my notes. Chapter 14.
Hang on, I've not even got mine up
yet. So you know how I was like, this chapter, well, I'm in the Forest of Dean, because it's set in the forest. This chapter is not set in the Forest of Dean.
Just a forest.
That's later in the book. That's when they get the sword.
Yes, but they're in a forest.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I thought I was going to the Forest of Dean the week I was doing this chapter.
That is sad.
I was wrong, but I have now been to the Forest of Dean and I've saved up some facts for that chapter. So that's exciting.
Excellent.
Yes.
I mean, I was actually thinking about this, that one, I think in general they overthink the whole like avoiding Death Eaters thing. Like they're really like under the invisibility cloak when they're going to Tesco.
They don't even go to Tesco. That's what's about to piss me off.
I think they're overthinking it. Maybe I'm just overly not cautious, but I'm like, and maybe I watch too much of the show Hunted, which is a reality show where people go on the run and get hunted.
We've talked about it multiple times.
Just in case anyone's forgotten, honestly, watch it. It's a great show. I want to go on it. But the Death Eaters don't even have like that level of like, they can't do the license plate thing. And yeah, they have a certain amount of magic, but like, unless they're saying Voldemort, like, you have the whole of England and there's like 30 wizards in England. Like, come on.
Well,
like,
they don't know how they got tracked the first time, I will say. They don't know about the Voldemort thing yet.
Also, maybe just be like, let's go to Tesco. Let's go all together, have a rendezvous point and we can apparate like if needs be.
No,
and
don't. It's about to annoy me. I'm going to save it for the next chapter. I'm not going to talk about it yet. But
why I brought this up is because I was thinking about things that they could do to like throw them off. In particular, I was thinking about the Forest of Dean because you went into Go Ape and I was like, doing Go Ape would be the best place to hide because do Voldemort or the Death Eaters know what Go Ape is? No.
They think they're like, muggles can fly now.
Like, they're never going to be like, let's go check out the Go Ape in the Forest of Dean. That's definitely where they're hiding. They wouldn't even need to like camp and do like protection spells. Just go do Go Ape.
What, over and over again for months?
Yes.
While Horcrux brainstorming.
Yeah, just like they're on the zip line side by side being like, yeah, so it could be at Hogwarts.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah.
You're never going to get caught by Death Eaters mid zip line.
That's a really good lesson for life, I feel.
Voldemort doesn't know what Go Ape is.
No.
He's never going to think to go search a Go Ape.
Their hiding tactic is about to annoy me a lot. We'll get into it in these next few chapters.
Wait. Look at my typo.
Ron's covered in Ron. Ron.
Ron is covered in Ron.
Of course, it's Ron.
He's covered in blood.
He's covered in blood. Okay, so they've appeared on the forest floor. Harry is confused. He crawls up to Ron, who is covered in blood, and Hermione's like, he's been splinched. Now, the covered in blood thing. When we learn apparition in the last book, we had a discussion about how there must be no blood with apparition because Hannah Abbott lost her leg and was screaming, but it was described as her just standing there wobbling with her leg 5 foot behind her.
You couldn't suddenly wobble if there was blood, you'd slip.
But also, there'd be so much more panic. And also, if you lost your leg, you'd be dead within 2 minutes. Like, that's a lot of...
Unless you're on Grey's Anatomy, in which case you've probably got, like, 45 minutes.
Yeah, just the length of time of an episode, sure. But, like, now, splinching has become this thing where Ron has lost a lot of blood and is seriously incapacitated. And, like, yeah, they describe it, like, he's really weak from losing blood. And I just don't... It feels like the rules have changed in between books. Yeah. Because it even says, Harry always thought of splinching as comical. I'm like, you've seen splinching before. Why sometimes is it comical and isn't it?
I'm sorry. I could never look at someone losing their leg, even if they get it back, even if they're fine, whatever. That's never going to be comical to me. That's only going to be like fucking scarring.
It's quite comical if there's no blood and a person is just standing there with their leg 5 feet.
No. Do you think about actually seeing that?
Yeah.
No.
But
not
now
comical.
I'm saying is Harry Abbott, there's actually blood gushing from both.
That is definitely not comical.
Yeah. So I want some consistency in the whole thing.
God, it's almost like JK doesn't put the work into her magical systems.
I don't know what you're talking about. So Hermione's like, get the essence of Dittany out my bag. And Harry quickly realises that the quickest way to use this bag is to use their Axio spell, because otherwise you're just like fumbling around forever. Yeah. Gets the Dittany. Hermione puts it on to the wound and it kind of ends up looking like 3 days old. So it doesn't fully heal it, but it stops the bleeding and like...
And making it less strong.
That's fair.
You don't have to. It just was really giving me a kick.
That's what you want at 4 o'clock on a Saturday.
At least it's a Saturday. The past couple of times we've recorded on a Sunday and it's been... an experience.
Yeah, especially now I go into the office on Mondays. I'm like...
Yeah. Yeah, so they're debating whether or not Yaxley can get inside Grimmauld Place. He probably can. But either way, it's really not worth the risk. But it is really sad. And like, I understand...
I still had a point about the Dittany thing, but that's fine.
Oh, sorry. Go.
Hermione ends up like apologising loads for the Dittany. Like, she's like, oh, I could do more. There are healing spells, but I don't want to risk it. And Hermione's like apologising over and over again. And I feel like... I'll talk about this in the next chapter when I talk about like the locket effects, but I feel like Hermione, and we know this because of how stressed she gets, takes on so much of the burden of this hiding. Like, it's her that apparated them away. It's her that Yaxley attached himself to. Therefore, it's her that got them back out. And now it's her responsibility to work out how to heal Ron. And it's her that's got to make the decision, hey, I kind of know a healing spell, but what if it makes him worse? And she's apologizing to Harry and saying like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, this is such a burden that you're going through of, you feel like it's your fault Yaxley attached himself to you, therefore it's your fault Ron gets splished, and now it's your fault that you don't know the healing spells well enough. And I'm just like, I'm filled with this rage of how unfair it is on her. And I think, and I'll go into a lot more detail in the next chapter, but I think we explore quite a lot what the locket plays on for Harry and Ron, but I think this level of like perfectionism and guilt is probably what it preys on with Hermione. This like, I have to do this, I have to, but I'm not doing it well enough, and I'm responsible if we get killed.
Yeah, it's so fucking gendered. I definitely have more notes on it next chapter, but it's like, it's disgusting that she's taking on like all of the physical and emotional labor, and like, what are the boys doing? They're just vibing.
And it's not her fault she hasn't learned healing spells. She's making the best decision for Ron here, but she's filled with this guilt.
Yeah,
I hate, like, I'm fine with the level, I'm not fine with it, but like, I can get away with the level of preparedness Ron did. But the level of preparedness that Harry goes into this of also not learning healing spells, not knowing where the Dittany is unacceptable. Yeah. He asked them to come along. Actually, he said, don't come along. And they insisted on coming along. This was his burden to bear.
Yeah. And especially like, we'll again talk about it more later. No, later the next chapter when they have the falling out. But Ron kind of taking clearly hints of what Hermione said and turning it into this really extreme thing about, we thought Harry would have any better idea. Like, I definitely think it wasn't that she was saying, I thought he would know the exact locations of Horcruxes. she was probably saying he should have thought more about, like, okay, are we camping? Like, what are we doing? Like, where are we staying? Do we know enough about healing magic? Those kind of things. I feel like that's definitely what Hermione was probably saying to Ron.
I absolutely agree.
It's not that overall she understands, unlike Ron, but it's the nitty gritty details. Like, it genuinely pisses me off to the point where I actually think that it's not on Harry, it's J.K. Rowling's sloppy writing. Harry is reasonably intelligent. Why has he had literally not a single thought? Why has he been ready, like, I'm going to go. No one follow me. I'm being dramatic. And yet not even thought, where am I staying?
Yeah.
What am I, like...
It's Hermione who asked Mr. Weasley for the tent. In terms of closeness to Miss Weasley, it goes Ron, Harry, Hermione. Hermione has her own dad. Like,
yeah.
But it's Hermione who said to Mr. Weasley, can I have Lumbago? What, no, Perkins. Perkins had Lumbago. His name is not Lumbago.
Excellent.
I'm going to call him Lumbago from now on.
Change approved.
Yeah. Can I have Lumbago's old tent? Like,
yeah.
This burden that she's bearing is not fair. And Hermione, we've talked about before, has always unfortunately served as a bit of a plot device. And as we've discovered, although a brilliant character, is underdeveloped in lots of ways, but I feel like this really, like, hits in this book how underdeveloped she is. Because again, in the next chapter, we know the locket preys on each of them individually. We never find out. I can only guess by context, which I have a lot of theories about, but we never actually find out how that plays out with Hermione. And that frustrates me, because that locket's job was to target their weaknesses, was to break them apart from the inside.
And it's just like, it's like Hermione's just, she's just less affected by all this. Like,
that's not true.
And it's like, and it's not explained or given a reason in a way that's, like, really infuriating. And it feels very like, it feels very like, oh, but women, they're just naturally stronger. Women, like, they can deal with more pain. I mean, they can, men are fucking pussies. But, like, women just, you know, they can deal with more blah, blah, blah. It's like putting that really unfair,
but explain,
like, expectation.
That in the text.
Yeah, it's absolutely infuriating. And I definitely think that there's an element of intentionality in this, that it's kind of a continuation of, at Hogwarts said, rely on Hermione for her notes and to, like, start their essays and stuff. That feels intentional, that this is kind of an extension of that, like, that they're so used to it that they've just come to expect it. But there also feels like a lot that isn't intentional, that is J.K. Rowling not putting the work in. Like, at the end of the day, we're pretty much in Harry's head about most of this. Like, we're getting him describing his emotions, blah, blah, blah. And yet not a single, like, and Harry maybe spent some time to, like, think about how this actually was going to play out and what his plan was. And it's also insane to me that in the summer and the year leading up to this, when they pretty much know, okay, like, we're going to have to go and do this, that they don't have any, like, meetings that we really see about the three of them. The only stuff that we see is obviously Harry filling them in after his meetings with Dumbledore. But this, like, and I know that they're kept apart this summer, but, like, even when they were, like, before, they should have been, like, at Hogwarts, they should have been, like, sitting down and be like, okay, like, what are we doing? Like, we have meetings about the podcast, and that's not a fucking life or death, you know?
Yeah.
It's insane.
And I like that that's explored slightly. Again, in the next chapter, there's this line, which I'm so annoyed I don't have my book, because I put a highlighted tab on it as one of the most incredible lines, I think, in all the books, about them being teenagers and Harry suddenly realizing they're three fucking teenagers in a tent.
Mm.
But that doesn't excuse some of the lack of planning they have, especially Harry, with the fact that this emotional burden is falling on Hermione. And I think it's this line where she's saying, Harry, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. And Harry says, don't be stupid, it wasn't your fault. If anything, it's mine. But I don't think this helps Hermione at all, because she's the kind of person to take on that burden, to take on that guilt, to not feel all of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, say what you were saying about Yaxley in Grimmauld Place.
Yeah, so we know that Yaxley potentially can get inside Grimmauld Place. They're not 100% sure, but it's, like, not worth the risk. I do understand the risk of summoning creature.
I don't think it's as great in 1 to 2 months to risk not summoning him. I get today, because there's a good chance today he's being handled by Death Eaters. But I think in 2 months they should be like, hey.
Even a week.
Should we summon him whilst holding hands so that we can disapparate on the spot if someone else comes?
Exactly. Like, I refuse to believe that someone's going to be literally holding on to creature for, like, a week now, you know?
Exactly.
Especially, like, I like to think that creature hopefully had the common sense to be like, yeah, fucking hated having them around, you know? Like, I feel like Creature's smart.
Well, we know he ended up at Hogwarts, so we know he wasn't in Death Eater captivity.
Exactly.
For the
he
whole time.
He definitely played it off being like, guys, you know I'm on your side. I've helped you in the past. I fucking hated them dickheads.
Yeah, like, and as soon as he went to bed, like, to Hogwarts. But yeah, like, a Death Eater was not touching him the whole time. And we know Elf...
touching me, touching
apparition
you.
Heinous from last time Creature was summoned. Like, it's pretty within 2 seconds. So, like, a Death Eater does not have time to run across the room.
Exactly.
So, yeah, in a week, 2, 3, 4, try summoning Creature. I mean, why do they want him? Just to cook for them? Bit of a dodgy thing there. They're putting him in... But just to check he's okay? Yeah, please do that. And then he'll probably be like, let me cook for you. And they're like, thank God, because we have taken... Every stupid plot convenient way for these three to not get food so that their tempers can rise rather than all the 1,000 ways I can think in my head for them to safely get food.
And we have to acknowledge how sad this is. Just the fact that he's going to be there waiting with the pie. I really have this mental image of him with oven mitts and a little apron. And he hears them come in. So he like totters into the hallway to be like, hello.
I got a pie.
And then it's a death.
No, I bet he shouts at them to take their shoes off because he's bossy. Because he told Master Harry to take his shoes off. He's not just like, I love you. He's like, take your shoes off. No, wash your
hands. And they come in and it's not Harry, Ron and Hermione.
And they
not
haven't
only...
taken their shoes off. So they're trampling mud in his kit.
And as well, like, he doesn't know what this means. He doesn't know that it's just, like, that there was a kerfuffle. For all he knows, this means that Harry, Ron and Hermione have been caught and are now dead.
Does he? Right, okay. So elf magic works by them being attached to an owner. So wouldn't it feel when their master has died because they are no longer have a master?
I guess so, yeah. That's a very good point.
So I think there must be a way he knows Harry's not dead because
but Ron could be dead.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, Hermione could be as well, but he doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't mind Hermione anymore.
Yeah.
Doesn't love her, but he doesn't mind her.
So, but yeah, it's really fucking sad. Like, oh, it's awful.
So Ron wakes up. They're all on the floor.
I saw the order of my notes. Sorry, my brain just malfunctioned. Continue.
Ron wakes up. Hermione reveals that they're in the woods where they held the Quidditch World Cup. And it's the first place she thought of. I would like to say that Hermione, in the next 4 months, remembers... I have so many questions about whether she has been to every place they operate to, but we can bring that
she
up in later
chapters. She
knows a
lot of forests.
She knows so many forests and riverbanks.
Like,
and...
But the thing is, do you have to have been somewhere to... Like,
this is my
there.
Question, but you should even have like an idea of where you're going. I can imagine the Grangers as a not abroad walking holiday people.
Oh God, yes. They're dentists. They
love a Peak District walk. They love a Wales walk holiday. Yeah. I can imagine when Hermione went to France, it was basically one of the first times she's been abroad, and she loves, the Grangers just loved a little walking holiday. So I can imagine Hermione has a Rolodex of places.
Imagine you go abroad for the first time and it's France.
The first time I went abroad.
Oh, you poor thing.
You can drive to it. Of course, the first time I went abroad was France.
Yeah, but it's France.
Actually, the first 8 times I went abroad would have been France. Oh, we only went to France.
You poor thing. You probably thought the rest of the world was a third world country. You thought all foreigners were French.
Well,
how are you racist?
That's the thing, yeah. Sorry.
My God, I'm amazed you're not pro-Brexit.
You can... Most English people's first time they go abroad is France. You can drive to it.
My family had good enough sense that we did not go to France often.
Yeah, you went to America, which is so much better.
Not growing up, we didn't.
Okay.
That was like a teenage thing.
Where did you go growing up?
Spain, Greece. Yeah. Sorry, this is really obnoxiously middle class. We did occasionally... this is going to be really posh. We did occasionally pop over to France, like just for a short weekend, especially because like the supermarkets there were really good. But that was rare. That was really rare.
No, until I was 13, every summer we drove to France. Sometimes we'd drive all the way to the south of France. You'd have to have a stopover somewhere in northern France, which was exciting. One time we stayed on a random lady's farm and she let me collect eggs the next morning, which I feel like was like a precursor to me falling in love with Neil. I'm like, I got really excited about collecting eggs.
Oh my God.
Neil's ex when we were first dating. I was like, he was like, what's wrong with you? Why do you want to come do this? I was like, please, can we go collect eggs?
Were they warm? Because that would really give me the ick if I picked one up and it was still warm. No, No.
You have to stamp with a big stamp machine.
That I can see is fun. I just don't want to touch it if it's warm.
That's weird. It's fine.
No, it's like when you sit down on a public toilet and it's still warm.
I hate that. Yeah, that is.
I've definitely said before, but Neil growing up on an egg farm is just my absolute favourite thing. I texted him the other day. I just love any egg question I have. And bear in mind, his parents haven't owned an egg farm in a long time now.
It's only 4 or 5 years.
Okay, no, but as in, I texted him the other day to be like, Neil, I've noticed that lately I can only buy a 6-pack of eggs. So they're not doing any larger sizes. Like, why is that?
He'll have an answer for everything.
He didn't, though.
Oh, he didn't. That is weird.
He normally does. He's also like, instead of Googling something, I ask Neil. And again, it's like, you know when you kind of have those jokes that you're like, no one else is finding this funny. This is just a joke for me. Like, one of those things is me asking Neil really random just questions about the world.
No, but you shouldn't do that, because when he's wrong about something and I've got the answer right, he's a real dickhead about it. So I wish you wouldn't treat him like an encyclopedia. Because sometimes I'll ask him the question something and say what I think is the answer. Then he'll be like, no, 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 it'll be this. And then we'll look it up and it's what I said. And he's like,
well, he's a bastard man. I've always said it. But no, it's like, it's just a little joke. It's like the time when I asked him, I was like, you know, like coffee machines and like stuff, like devices when they make a little beep to be like, your coffee's ready or whatever.
This was a great question.
I was like, what's beeping? Is this like a physical beep or like a program beep? I can't even remember what he answered now, so I clearly didn't give a shit that much. But Neon's the kind of person, he normally knows, and if he doesn't know, he's very good at confidently answering bullshit.
Oh yeah, sometimes he's wrong and will answer like he's right.
Oh yeah,
in fact that happens quite often. The one he explained to me, which was really useful, he's actually very good at reading factual information though and distilling it into language that makes sense. That's a very good skill he has. But he explained to me how I didn't understand how intercom doorbells worked, where you're buzzed in. It's just magnets.
Well, yeah, this is the same kind of question as me about the coffee machine. We're clearly both really confused about buzzers and stuff.
It terrifies me. I have an irrational fear of intercoms in flat buildings. Oh,
no, it really stresses me out. I don't, they're all like different.
Some of them you talk into, some of them you don't. Some of them people have to come and let you in. Some of them it makes a noise and then you push. Some of them you pull. Like, I'm just like, have some consistency. I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. And I'm sure some of them they can see you. Some of them they can't.
Yeah, some of them you have to hold a thing to talk. Some of them you don't. How am I supposed to, like, to be fair, the last place I lived had an intercom and I never did this. If here had an intercom now, I would give people instructions to get into the upstairs flats where I am, because I'm on the downstairs floor and they've got a separate entrance to go up. I don't understand it. And I've only gone up there a couple of times now, and each time, 3 times, it's so stressful. I'm like just pressing the thing and then I'm there like...
there you go. There's my irrational fear. Intercoms.
Yeah. But there's a bit either in this chapter or the next chapter where I was like, Neil, I can't believe you didn't come on because eggs are mentioned.
Yes, there is. And they're stealing eggs from a farm.
And it's a shame now that we record here, because like normally we would just be like, oi, Neil, like come in and say a few words about stealing from egg farms. But maybe you could get him in the edit to voice note.
I can. I know what his reaction will be. It'll be, depending on the size of the egg farm, this is such a negligible difference that the farmers wouldn't care at all. It's nice Hermione left it under the coop, but that's really fucking weird and they'd be quite confused. But the amount of eggs farmers produce, like Neil's family took eggs every single day to eat. When I started going out with him, his mum would just give me 30 tray of eggs as gifts. That's loss hot. To their profit is so minimal. But that was a 12,000 egg farm, and we don't know, this farm could be 20 chickens.
Please, can you now side by side Neil's voice? Because I know it's going to be word for word.
Neil's going to be like, it's fucking disgusting, actually.
No, it'll be so funny if he's word for word said what you've said and you know each other that well.
Hello, Neil here, a resident expert. I think it's absolutely fine that Hermione left the money under the chicken coop. And it's described as a lonely farm, and she calls it a coop as well, which to me implies it's not very big. And I suspect that a farmer of this type would probably sell their eggs by the gate anyway, if they're not just using them for their own food. And gateside sales in the UK, you would just leave the eggs in a little box and expect people to leave money on an honesty system. So I think that's pretty normal for the English countryside. And while she's done it in a slightly roundabout way, it's totally fine. She does mention that they got bread as well, though. Like, did she steal the bread from the chickens? That's my question. You know, the fact this small farm had bread lying around raises more questions than it does the eggs.
It's your anniversary soon, and I know this because it's now in my calendar.
Me and Charlie have decided to set up a shared calendar. So it's a goblet of wine calendar, but it has access to both our personal calendars. We both decided to then put fake things in it. Charlie's was kidnap me, Sue.
No, you didn't actually put anything fake in yours. Were just, she had one where like it was like it. I just glanced at it and it said the word fuck in capital letters, and I was like, if they're scheduling their sex, and I now
6 weeks
to...
in advance, so you've got access to each other's calendars. It was 6 weeks before.
Genuinely could have been a possibility. Like, no, and like, no judgment if you were. It's better to like conscientiously make the time for it.
It absolutely is.
We all know what, you know, date nights is a code word for, but like, I was like, I really don't want access to Hannah's calendar if it's going to be like, fuck new tonight. But it wasn't. It was like, it's your fucking anniversary, you idiot.
So the reason that's in there is because for 8 years, I have forgotten when our anniversary is. Last year, I finally decided to put it in my digital calendar, and I put it as, it's your fucking anniversary, you idiot. Which, yeah, then Charlie saw it's your fucking and was like, I was what like, are you doing?
I thought it was going to be like, it's your fucking night. Like, you had a night of the week that you like crank out the Marvin Gaye. And... No.
But I don't know what me and Neil's anniversary is because
I've never remembered any of mine.
Spring dates. March, April... February, March, April will blend together for me. I can't remember them very clearly, especially March and April. And then I know we started going out within 2 weeks of Easter. But the problem with Easter is it moves by a month every year. So it's not a helpful marker.
Yeah. Every single one of my relationships, we've gotten together between like October, November time.
So you're horniest between October and November. You're like a dog on heat.
Yeah. It's the one time of year that I actually give a shit about getting laid. But also,
she wants a boyfriend for Christmas. Sorry, boyfriend or girlfriend for Christmas. I was being them homophobic. A partner for Christmas, okay?
Nice backtracking there. Yeah, but then not only that, but everyone I've ever been with, their birthdays are like between like September, November. Mm. So it's like a constant thing of, oh God, when is their birthday? And when is like our anniversary? It's very stressful.
I truly just did that episode of Never Not Going Out We Watch. It was like, gay, guy, gay.
Hannah's hate criming me, guys.
I'm wearing dungarees. Okay, so they decide to not move on. They decide to stay where they are. So Hermione's like, great. She's learned all the different muggle protection and hiding charms. The other two haven't. She's also packed the tent. Again, fine, it's fine. Lumbago's tent, as I said.
I would love this because none of you will go camping with me. You're all friends that hate camping and hate theme parks, like roller coasters.
Neil likes roller coasters. Go with him. I'll go do something else.
Spend more time with Neil.
I'll go do something else. I like
All I want is like friends to go camping with, and friends go, we live so close to Thorpe Park. It is insane that we do not go to Thorpe Park. Maybe me and Neil will just start going to Thorpe Park.
Okay, do it. I don't care. And yeah. I will camp if you get me a glamping pod.
But when you like went away this weekend, and I knew it was like in your calendar, blah, blah, blah. But literally
again,
then when I saw you
calendars
like,
now.
Yeah. It's going to sound like the most codependent. It is codependent.
I have to know what we're both doing at all times so I can creepily text you like, how's this going?
Yeah. I mean, most of the time I forget to add anything into my calendar anyway. So good luck. But yeah, no. And then you like posted driving away and we were sorry. And I was like, yeah, she's going to the Forestine. And I was like, if this motherfucker is camping, I was like, I'm going to get so pissed. And then no, you'd like run to an Airbnb. But
No, it was a cabin. It was called a forest holiday. It was a cabin.
Okay. But I was like, I swear to God, if they're camping, I'm going to kick off. Because for years, all I've wanted is friends to go camping. I just want to go to Wales and camp and have a bonfire and do marshmallows.
Why can't I have a bonfire and a bed? Why?
You have a bed in the tent.
It's truly not the same. What if the weather's bad? Loads of times when I go on these weekends away, the weather's terrible.
But if you've only just paid for a campsite, you're not like losing any...
I'm getting wet.
No, but as in you don't have to go, you're not really losing any serious money.
No. I will go to Wales to a cabin or Airbnb that has a campfire with you.
Maybe Nikita likes camping. Nikita, do you like camping?
Get other friends.
Fine, I'll bin you off.
I didn't say bin me off, you can get other friends.
Oh
friends
no, I have a limit.
I have it's like a one-in-one-out policy.
No, it it pretty much. Like, historically, whenever I make a friend, I then not lose a friend in this argument, but I not intentionally, but I find it really stressful to, like, keep up with a certain amount of people. So there's always some... So you should fear any time I make a new friend one of these days.
That's why a group is good, because there's less pressure to keep up one-on-one. You just let the group do the work. Well, as a collective, you have to do less work individually.
Yeah, this is what I've somehow managed to, like, merge being friends with you to now as you, Neil, Elle, and Aiden, because we had the weird thing where everyone knew each other.
We were always going to be together.
Yeah, so now I'm like, now I don't have to individually talk to them as much.
They can talk to each other. Yeah. Aiden just messages Neil, like, weird band lineups. Like,
Aiden only messages me to slag off one of our mutual friends. Like, not my, one of their mutual friends. And literally, our mate Aiden, who's our friend Elle's boyfriend, literally will text me twice a year, and all it is to slag off this one bloke. And the occasion that I get a notification from Aiden, I'm like, oh, that's weird, Aiden. He's slagging off, blah, blah, blah.
He's just a bitchy person at heart.
He is, and I support it.
Yeah. So they're putting the tent together, and Hermione starts to say, that will keep out. Well, no, it will keep out other randomers. It probably won't keep out Vol, and says, don't say the name. I'm sorry, but it feels like a jinx or something. Can we call him you-know-who? Now, I have two trains of thought with this. Do you want to go first?
So, no, sorry, now I'm just thinking about trains. You said trains.
I have two trains of thought with this. One, this is fucking convenient for the plot. However, my counter to that is... I fully buy into the theory that the reason why everyone is scared of saying Voldemort for the entire time that Ron has been growing up is because this jinx curse that is put on in the end of in book 7 did exist at some point during the First Wizarding War, but people didn't actually know what the trigger was, and the first time Arthur and Molly weren't in the Order of the Phoenix, so they don't have that information, and what it's turned into is this superstition. Ron has always been uncomfortable with saying Voldemort. Hermione only started saying it in book 5, and Ron has actually never said it. And Ron saying it feels like a jinx or something is this, I feel like he has this overheard bit of information, this something, this old superstition lodged in his brain, which is coming out going, stop, something is wrong. Mm. There is something wrong with this. And I really like that it comes from Ron. And I think if it had been explained better in the text, I actually love this, because it's not just plot convenient. It's the fact that Ron is the only one to grow up in the Wizarding World. And there is some, it's not just superstition. There is some real nugget of information lodged in the back of his very young mind here.
I like to think that in the first war, magical technology hadn't advanced enough to be like, it's if you say Voldemort. Mm. But I like to think that it was more along the lines of Beetlejuice, where you had to say it three times. You've seen Community, haven't you? No? Community TV show does this really great joke where across 4 seasons or something, there's 3 episodes, completely separate episodes, where someone says Beetlejuice in one, and then like a season later, another character says Beetlejuice. And then another character, like another season later, says Beetlejuice, just completely unrelated. The third time Beetlejuice walks in the background, and it's like a joke that was so long in the making, and it's really funny because it's kind of thing no one noticed at the time, but people have obviously since gone back and be like, that is the third time they, anyway. So that's, I like good. To think it's like that, the original war, you had to say Voldemort 3 times and then he would appear just walking in the background. But I really like the amount of people that have noticed the times in Harry Potter when Ron makes a prediction that is correct.
Yeah, I love that as well.
I kind of, whilst I have dubious opinions on whether I think it's like actually true, I do love the theory that Ron is psychic, because I think it's so comedic to have that character that is like really dubious of like, what's it called, the lesson? Divination.
Yeah.
Divination isn't real, it's a load of shit, blah, blah, blah. But then he's actually like always correct about these things. So I kind of... Whilst, yeah, I do like that it's like kind of hang up of maybe people didn't know that it was literally the word in the original war, but they kind of saw a connection, but yeah, no one fully worked it out. I do like that, but I also really like the theory. And maybe it can be both, obviously.
Yeah.
But I like the theory that Ron is a tiny bit psychic and there is something in him, this psychic being like, do not say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the other hand, neither of those theories are explained, so... It's slightly plot convenient, but...
This, I've said it before, but I genuinely think part of the reason that Harry Potter is so important is that J.K. Rowling did such a bad job of fulfilling and explaining these things.
Yeah, so everyone could kind of be like, did you notice about this?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the same thing. When you want a video to go viral as a brand, you put a little tiny mistake in it or something weird in the background and people comment on it and then it goes viral because people are commenting on the mistake or the thing in the background or whatever. This is the same logic. Having it so badly so people could theorise and go online and talk about it with the age of the internet, I genuinely think that it's that timing and the like flaws in the world building is part of why it spread so much, because people want to talk about it. And I get it all the time. I read books and I'm like, I need to find someone else that has read this or is reading this because I want someone to talk about it with, to be like, I fucking hate this character or like this that.
Absolutely. And I'm so frustrated watching a 20-year-old TV show at the moment for the first time that I cannot Google anything to see if anyone has the same theory as me, because I risk spoiling everything. So at the moment I have all these theories and I'm like, okay, who do I tell the theories to?
But this is when you should utilize the Discord. Just go in, make like a little thread for Hannah Watches Lost. Honestly, the Discord would love it.
What if they accidentally spoil me? They won't. Scared. I don't know the ending of Lost. Do not tell me. Don't know the ending of Lost. I'm near the end of season 2 and I have all these theories.
Okay, but okay, they won't spoil it, but they would genuinely really enjoy that. Maybe we should have done a Lost podcast next.
I'm up for it. It's a fucking great TV show.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. I have only ever watched like half of the first season. I probably would love it, but I just didn't immediately. Whereas X-Files, I've literally just started watching it and I'm so hooked. And also, I'd always seen people say, obviously, X-Files, that Scully and Mulder are like one of the most iconic ships of all time, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of just assumed that it was people being like, it's a man and a woman leading a TV show, so people ship them. I am about 10 episodes in. I swear to God, like genuinely, I have never seen two people have more sexual chemistry. It's like borderline obscene. And like, they not in most episodes, they're not even doing anything, but they just have so much chemistry. And then there was one episode where it's like the like a bad thing that they were facing left like marks on your body. So they had to like check, like, and he has to check behind her neck and he like pulls it down. And then, and I was watching and I was like, I think I need a moment. Like, my, it was like proper like stroke of the back of her neck as he was like checking it. And I was like, oh, I mean, of course, like, you're going to have that level of, like, anyone is going to have that level of sexual chemistry with Gillian Anderson. Like, you can't be in a room with her and not be wanting to fuck her. But I'm like, I thought people were just shipping it because it's, like, man and woman leading a TV show. But it's, like, the casting team fucking nailed it.
Did you see the discussion that came out recently with the latest Bridgerton clip? The latest clip showed Anthony and Kate, the actors that play those, and they're dancing at a ball and they kiss. And it looks so spontaneous. People are like, sorry, that actually cannot be scripted. They must have randomly kissed. And people are like, they can't randomly kiss. They're not going out. He's very gay.
Yeah.
And it's all this discussion that how can those two have such discussions over Jonathan Bailey's ability to have straight chemistry, because it makes me laugh so much. But I then watch the clip over and over again, and I have never seen a more spontaneous natural kiss. It's not a full-on snog. They're dancing and one of them just goes in for a quick peck and the other's like hee hee, and I'm like, that is hard to script. That looks spontaneous.
Yeah. But oh my God, I saw somehow for the first time the clip of The Notebook was Gosling, right? I mix up the Ryans.
It's Gosling and...
what's her face?
Yeah.
Have you seen the clip at the Oscars where they recreate that kiss where she jumps on him?
No.
I'll show you that. They do it as the Oscars is a bit... And I was like, again, I kind of needed a moment. But also, you know, like actors that had that level of sexual chemistry and yet allegedly never... Billy Piper and David Tennant. I refuse to believe that they weren't fucking. I don't think they were fucking, because I think the moment you fuck, that chemistry's gone.
Yeah.
But like, I refuse to believe that there was nothing that you can't act that well. Like those seasons of Doctor Who.
You can't act with an actor. You just can't.
Not for sexual chemistry, because it's an untangible thing.
I always think it must be so nerve-wracking as an actor to know you've got so far in an audition process, then you have to do chemistry tests on screen. I'm like, this is not based on my skill. This is literally just based on natural chemistry that comes in the classroom. Because I've watched quite a few interviews, even though I haven't finished the Netflix show yet, of Ambika, can't say her name. Anyway, the two new actors in the One Day TV show, and the fact that they had both got down to the final few, but they were both chosen based on their chemistry screen test. And I was like, that's really nerve-wracking to be based on that. But they do have this just very natural, like, banterous relationship, which reflects the book really well.
Yeah, we've discussed a lot about Shonda's incredible Bridgerton casting.
Shonda, tell me what you are doing to the men.
The way she takes these mediocre men and then it becomes time for their season and they become like the hottest person ever.
Why does Colin look like a fucking sex god? Like,
it's Colin! No man called Colin should be a sex god.
But also, season one, season two, I was like, yeah, he's like cute, but like, whatever. Mm. Now I'm like,
yeah. Shonda, but like, please. In addition to that, because they surely didn't, maybe they did, but they surely didn't like chemistry read the secondary couples for the first season because they had no way of knowing it was going to be that popular.
They would have with Colin and Penelope. I think they would have for those two just in case, because that is the only true slow burn. Yeah, it's the only true slow burn. So I do believe they did for
that. But like, even that, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't, purely because they had no way to know it was going to get another season, let alone become as massive.
I do believe that Nicola Coughlan can have chemistry with a wooden door, so like,
yeah,
because she, do you know she's 37?
I know.
The fuck is that? How do I look like that at 36? She's like the most beautiful person alive. Yeah. Like, well, can you tell we're excited for Bridgerton season 3?
I know, right? Have you seen the Doctor Who trailer where there's a Regency episode?
don't, because all I have been, right, this is so smart. To jump on the Regency trend with your time travel show is literally marketing genius. But I am so excited. Do you remember?
I'm convinced that I didn't imagine this conversation. I'm convinced months ago I said to you two on WhatsApp, so I'll try and find the screenshots later. I'm convinced that I said to Hannah and Neil that they need to do a Regency Doctor Who episode.
I said that to you.
I will try and find this. I'm convinced we had a whole conversation about it.
Yeah, no, I remember talking about it to someone being like, the Regency resurgence at the moment, if you want to get new people into Doctor Who, you use the TARDIS to take them to a Regency period.
Yeah. But and even in the trailer, What's-Her-Face, the new assistant, goes, what in the Bridgerton? I'm like, yes. Anyway, Harry Potter.
Anyway, do we want to refill the drinks?
I've still got a tiny bit left.
I'll just kill myself.
I'll just refill it from there.
You don't want any vodka?
No, as in like, yeah, vodka and... Oh, is it downstairs? You're fucking useless, Hannah. You've got one fucking job.
I have loads of jobs. I have to do the Patreons. I have ginger. You did that to me.
It was already ginger. It's strawberry blonde now, Hannah.
Anyway, so they drag Ron inside the tent. Ron is very, very weak. He's lost all...
Like 4 points in.
Yeah,
and we're like an hour into...
Yeah, when you were like, how are we going to meet? So... This season's a bit more complicated than other seasons because we've chosen to do it within a year. So we have to choose kind of in advance what chapters we're mixing together and what we're doing separate. Mm. So I try to do it based on a synopsis of every single chapter, knowing the kind of things we talk about, knowing like we'd want all the end ones separate. And I told Charlie, Charlie was reading before me this time and looked at the list of what we're doing. She was like, oh, they're both separates. Read this chapter and was like, why have you left this separate? It's a really short chapter. And I was like, oh, it's probably because 15 is extremely long.
Which it is.
And there's
long, but just
heavy. And there's no way to separate them the other way. She was like, we'll have to like bulk it out with some other chat. And I was like,
it could just be a really short episode, but that's fine. We're now an hour in and I'm genuinely on bullet point
four.
My bullet point five was because Hermione goes into everything that happened during the apparition. I was like, teleport? Apparition. And she's like, well, you know, we appeared at Grimmauld Place and he was holding on to me. I managed to like spell him off and then like apparate it again, blah, blah. Harry, what? How are you so unaware? I'm so confused about how apparition works that in enough time to like land there, Hermione to become conscious of what was happening and throw Yaxley off with a curse and then go again. And yet Harry's like, why are we in a forest? Like, how has he not witnessed any of this? I don't understand.
Hermione's just working that much faster than everyone.
Is Harry completely being an airhead? The way he's like,
I think he's really affected by apparition because he's an idiot.
Like, I don't understand. Harry, you experienced the same timeline. How are you? I don't get it.
So they drag side the tent. They put him on the lower bunk. We get the extreme British comfort moment of, what else do? I'll make some tea, said Hermione breathlessly. And this is so quintessentially British, because if you're scared, make tea. If you're sad, make tea. If you're celebrating, make tea. If you don't know what to do and you're trying to fill an awkward moment, make tea. And I love tea as a plot device in any British book, because it genuinely can just like move a scene along, fill a time. Yeah. Like, it's just a thing.
Because Anna was going to be here all day today, and she's normally only here half a day, and I was like, she's going to be here in the morning.
Shit, she's going to be here all day.
I literally went to the shop just to get cow's milk so that she could have a cup of tea, because I am so scarred from the one time 6 years ago I did not have tea bags, and I still hear about it to this day. So yeah, I did that. This is how whipped I am. I'm so scared to not have tea for Hannah and to hear about it for another 6 years.
I will say once again, it wasn't just that there was no tea. I asked for tea. She said, do you want a drink? I said, yes.
I meant water.
I said, can I have a tea? She said, I don't have any tea. I was like, absolutely fine. Can I have a coffee? I don't have any coffee. Okay, that's fine. Can I have some squash? No. I was like, why are you offering me a drink then? What do you
want? Believe you about the squash thing, because I always have squash.
No, I was right.
There was no squash, it was like a bad timing. I'd just run out. But either way, I focus on the tea because, you know, it's that which gets brought up. Nikita, anytime she comes over, brings tea bags because she's a bitch.
Funny.
Very funny. We had a really lovely day the other day. We went to Nikita's house and we spent the entire day watching either like Regency or Studio Ghibli films, and she made us all tea. She literally whacked out a teapot. Oh my God, I meant to send it to you. I saw a teapot in the shape of a cat. No, but why? You should.
Why can't, why you buy it?
I don't make tea.
Make other types of tea.
Don't make any tea.
To like tea.
On that note though, I do really want to start like growing flowers to make tea. Like dry them out and make tea. I wanna do that.
Okay, that's not the kind of tea I like, but I'll try my best.
Oh no, I don't like that tea, but I wanna do it. I'm just, my entire adult life, here's the thing. I'm 29, I'm 30 this year. And I really realized that my life aspiration is to as closely recreate Stardew Valley as I can without actually having to run a farm.
Mm. Like, one day if you'll have a farm.
Maybe an egg farm. I'm going to steal Neil from you and start an egg farm. Oh. Wouldn't that be the twist?
What am I meant to do?
Go be ginger somewhere, I don't know. Like, it brings me so much joy. I was thinking about it because I made hot honey the other day, which literally you pour honey in a pan and boil it with some like chilies and stuff. But then I was like, I love making like syrup, even though that's literally boiling sugar and water and things like that. I'm like, I'm making artisan goods, like in Stardew Valley. And then I'm like, I'm growing flowers, and I'm like, I want to grow vegetables. I want to grow flowers and dry them and make tea. And I'm like, I just want to live inside Stardew Valley.
One day you're gonna have a cow.
I would love egg jokes aside, I would love to have chickens.
I would love to have chickens. I'd actually quite like to have a cow.
Cows unnerve me. I don't know, growing up in the countryside, the amount of times I used to get like chased by cows, is the most terrifying thing, because you know that thing in like horror films when someone's being chased by a serial killer or whatever, but the serial killer's just walking. And it's like, okay, that's a bit silly, but when cows do it, they chase you, but they just walk after you. And it's the most menacing, terrifying thing.
Because like 7 Britons a year get killed by cows.
That's 7 too many.
If you've never been chased by a cow or cornered by a cow, it is actually really scary.
It really is. Especially because...
that's why I want one. It's a lot harder for them to kill me as one.
A herd back you into a corner and you're like...
Yeah. But like, it's... Okay, so like, picture this. Picture this. You're not from the countryside or not from the British countryside or whatever. I don't know. You're walking through a field. You think there's no cows. All of a sudden, cows appear. It's always the way. You check before you go in the field. There's no cows. Suddenly there is a swarm of cows. And they're like a good, decent away, but you're like, okay, I'm just gonna hurry through this. And they walk and they stare at you and all of them, and there's now 15 cows, and they're all looking at you and just calmly walking towards you. They're not gaining on you, and yet it feels so threatening, and they're walking after you, and you're kind of now walking quite fast through this field, and you're kind of having to dodge the cow shit. You're like, I should have checked for the cow shit. Should have known there was cows by the cow shit. And then you look and you're like, it's fine. The end is in sight. I'm going to get out. I'm going to get away from these cows, which now are starting to gain on me. And then you look and it's a kissing gate. If you don't know what a kissing gate is, it's kind of like this. So it moves like that. So you can't just go through it. You kind of have to go around and like move the door around you.
You move the gate behind you, you get out the other side.
And you're like, that's vital seconds. If this was a horror film, that's the moment when you have to get your keys out and you're fumbling at your keys. You're fumbling at the kissing gate. You reach the kissing gate. You're fumbling. You're trying to get through. The cows are gaining at you. You're finally through. You're safe. But by God, you're not going to cross that field for like a good another 3 days until you have to cross the field again. And the cows come for you again.
You're too scared of cows. Those cows just want a little lick.
It's terrifying. This could be the poll.
I'm not that scared of cows. I don't mind them following me. It's when they back you into a corner because they've got calves in the field. So they brought Ron into the tent. They've made some tea because that's the only thing British people know how to do. Harry feels that it has the same effect as fire whiskey. It burns away a bit of the fear fluttering in his chest. And that's right. That is what tea does, because tea brings a level of homeliness and comfort to any situation. Sure. That's why we drink it in any situation. So even in this terrifying new thing, it brings a sense of home.
Sure.
So they start discussing the catamounts and they say they hope they got away. They hope they didn't ruin their life. And there's this really sweet sentence that is terribly written, to the point where I remember the first time I read this book leaning over to ask my mum what this sentence meant. And she was annoyed because she hadn't read it yet. And she was like, I don't want to be spoiled. And I was like, no, I'll cover the rest of the page. Can you just read this sentence for me and explain it to me? And she read it and she was like, yeah, that's terribly written. Like, I can explain what it means, but it's really terribly written. So it's, Hermione was watching Ron fret over the fate of the catamounts, and there was such tenderness in her expression that Harry felt almost as if he had surprised her in the act of kissing him.
Okay.
There's too many like hers and hims, and it's just, there's better ways to construct this sentence, and that's such a small thing, but the only reason I bring it up is because I have such a clear memory of the first time I read this, not being able to make head or tails of this sentence. Being like, what? Sorry, did Hermione kiss Ron just then? I'm so confused. And like,
it reeks of J.K. Rowling being like, oh shit, I've not actually done enough to establish Ron and Hermione as like a viable ship.
And I'm about to break them apart. So I need to give one last, I think there's one last big push for them before the next chapter.
Yeah, definitely. Can I just say, thank God that they didn't leave anything about their plan, specifically Horcruxes, in Grimmauld Place.
Yeah, I know.
I know that common sense is like, before going on this big mission, just in case, like, take your notes with you. That's kind of thing Hermione would have thought of, the boys wouldn't have. But like, thank God they didn't even need like a scrap of paper where they were like, okay, so it's going to be the snake, the blah, blah, blah. Like, that literally
brought their whole plan down. Yeah. Ron doesn't even realise they've got the locket. Ron has been lying here splinched, half bled to death, thinking they're now just stuck in a forest, not realising they actually got
it. And he gets arsy with them, but it's like, bro, you're bleeding out.
They were trying to save you. But also, I do feel a little bit like when he's like, why am I always the last to know? You are a little bit. Like, it plays into this thing that comes up hugely in the next chapter, which he isn't involved as much. Like, he's just like, you got it. That's fine. I guess I'll just half die. It says the locket is as large as a chicken's egg, which no. I don't believe Umbridge is walking around with a neck as large as a chicken's egg.
It's quite gaudy. It's giving rap bling.
Maybe just a tall.
Umbridge was in her rapper era.
Yeah. What
would her rapper name be? Little
Toad.
Little Pinky.
Ew. So they discuss whether it could have been destroyed, and they agree that no, it's definitely still whole because we know that the object has to be destroyed, and Harry remembers the diary and the ring. And then as they're touching it, they feel what they think is a metal heartbeat inside. And then they make the stupidest decision ever. There's a lot of plot device in the next two chapters so that we get to the conclusion at the end of the next chapter that we do, which, yeah, I'll get into it in the next chapter, but there's plot devices used, and one of them is that they have to wear the Horcrux. So Harry puts it round his neck against his chest beside the pouch Hagrid gave him. Or you could put it in the fucking pouch!
Yeah. What fucks me off about this? I understand the pouch is a plot device for later on in the Malfoy, which to
is
me...
Is it even? Oh, the mirror.
Yeah.
I thought a plot device would be someone else trying to get into it, but fair enough. Like, it's not brought up why no one else
can get it. That, to me, even though makes no sense, that, like, surely they would search them and be like, let's take this pouch off him. That's clearly, like, you know, something. But I understand introducing the pouch because you have to give Harry away to get the mirror out. And it's not like they'd let him have a shard of glass underneath, you know, because he could cut his ropes or whatever with it. So I understand that there needs to be something. I still don't think it makes a lot of sense because I think they would take everything off him, especially some mysterious pouch. But the pouch especially, just make it a normal pouch at this point, because a pouch that can't be opened by anyone else is then like a clear, put the Horcrux in it. But just a normal pouch, I could okay, yeah, maybe they'd like let him keep just a random pouch. But I feel like if they had a pouch, they tried to open it, but like, we can't open it. They're going to be like, well, there's something in there, so we're going to take it, you know? Yeah. Whereas like just a random pouch, they might be like, it's like, you know, when you go in a bar and the bouncer checks your bag, but he goes, whatever. But yeah, I don't know. The entire thing is flawed and there's always going to be plot holes no matter what way you spin it. And she probably should have done a bit more work on this, but it fucks me off that this is literally, she has introduced the perfect like way to store the Horcrux and then just doesn't use it. And it's giving the like mirror originally where Harry just forgets about it when it's like literally the thing that could have solved all the problems.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how many times is Harry going to be given this super cool, unique, special, wonderful, magical object that will solve all his problems and then forget about it?
It's pointed out even here as laying beside the pouch. And all it could have been solved with is, because of everything else in there, it didn't fit in. Because it was the size of a chicken egg, it didn't fit in.
But we're talking about eggs a lot this episode.
We know the Marauder's map's in there, so we know the pouch is pretty fucking big.
Yeah. I mean, I picture it like Hermione's bag where it...
I don't imagine he's got a whole fucking bag around his...
Well, no, as in the extendable charm. That's what I mean. As in it's bigger on the inside.
I wish I knew. I wish this... Yeah. So they decide they need to take it in turns to keep watch. And this continues for the entire time they're in the tent, which I do understand. Like, there's some instances where all three of them are inside. I do understand their need to keep watch. But I just feel like there's a lot of instances where they could sit with the tent door open, have a heating charm, and all three be inside. Like, I feel like the actual physical act of sitting outside the tent is a little bit unnecessary compared to just putting all your seats near the tent door, having the tent door open, and putting a heating charm around you.
Especially, I mean, it's still insane at this point that they've not made a rendezvous point. And it's just there for plot convenience when Ron goes that they don't have a way to meet up with him again. But it surely, if one person is outdoors, makes it easier for them to get grabbed and separated and you not be able to apparate away. At least if you're all in the tent, even if a Death Eater bursts in, you're then all together and you can apparate away. But either way, they should have had a rendezvous point. Like, okay, we get split up. The next Tuesday after we split up at 12 o'clock, we meet at this location.
Okay, I think what we're going to discover is our problem with the camping. It's not the dragging on of the camping in the slightest. It's the amount of plot convenient, lazy writing there is to make the plot beats of the camping work. Like, this is what I think we're coming up against. And we haven't even talked about the fact that the locket is the fucking ring from Lord of the Rings yet. That's about to come up in 2 pages time. But everything, the hunger, the locket, the fact one of them needs to keep watch, the all of that is plot convenience so the plot beats can happen in the tent. Yeah. So I think when people say they don't like the camping, they're not actually talking about the camping dragging on. They're talking about some of the really lazy things that end up in the camping for the plot to move along.
Yeah, it's wild to me. Do you remember at the time when the books were coming out that like such a popular... I mean, not clickbait, because it wasn't so much clickbait then, but such a popular thing was being like, there is this massive plot hole in the Harry Potter books. And it was always the 9 3/4 that it doesn't actually like exist because the platforms don't line up. Do you remember when that was the big Harry Potter gotcha?
Yeah.
And it was always a thing because the books were so popular at the time that people just assumed that they're popular, therefore they are flawless and perfect and there can't be a plot hole. So this one plot hole, that's not even a fucking plot hole, is like such a gotcha clickbaity thing. And it, it, it's insane to me to think about it now because there are so many actual plot holes in Harry Potter. I'm like, you could have done those articles, be like, there's this plot hole in Harry Potter, and literally it could have been about anything.
Yeah.
But it never was about an actual plot hole. It was always they wrote about, she didn't realise that actually the platforms weren't next to each other. And it's like, that's not a plot hole. That doesn't affect the plot.
Yeah. So Harry goes on watch and he basically has three pages pretty much of the most depressive thoughts you've ever thought.
Oh, my note was Harry starts to get all...
Yeah. He basically goes into a depression spiral, which we've all had a depressive thought spiral. You start thinking of one bad thing and it just goes and it goes and it goes and you can't get out the spiral. And we've all been there. So he's hungry. Hermione has collected some mushrooms and stewed them in a billy can. But, you know, he's hungry because there's no food. He's suspicious about the rustling of twigs. He's concerned because they've managed to get a Horcrux, but how will they destroy
it? J.K. Rowling cracked open the, like, words for emotions.
Yeah, she's got them all. It felt like they'd been hurtling towards this point for weeks, months, maybe even years, but now it had come to an abrupt halt. He didn't know where the other Horcruxes were. Nameless forebodings crept up on him. Ron and Hermione were talking softly behind him. He thinks, are they talking about him? Neither can live while the others... And he's telling himself, this is a stupid idea. Don't think that. But these thoughts won't stop coming. And we'll later learn that this is the Horcrux causing... Although he might be having these thoughts anyway, the Horcrux is really exacerbating this issue of this depressive thought spiral.
The thing is, I often have days like this and then I go and piss and it comes out red and I'm like, it's my period.
It's your period. It's basically a... It's basically that, yeah.
He's on... Yeah.
Harry's
boy's menstruating.
What the Horcrux does... is give you the last day before your period.
Yeah, and this is...
That's why Hermione copes with...
Yeah, this is kind of what I like about the argument of Hermione dealing with it, is that she's very used to having to kind of deal with this hormonal effect. It's a flawed interpretation, but I can see it.
I'm not here for it.
But what I don't like is the actual, like, emotional, physical labour that she has to do.
Yeah.
Because that's just gendered in an unnecessary way.
Yeah. So his scar starts to hurt, like it's just prickling, and he's got all these images running around his mind about creature, poor creature. What happened when Yaxley arrived? What if Yaxley hadn't arrived? The scar's really hurting now. Lupin told them about magic that they wouldn't have encountered. Why didn't Dumbledore explain more? Why couldn't Dumbledore have lived longer? He thought he'd have more time. Snape killed him, blah, blah, blah. And he slips into a vision. The vision is of Voldemort torturing Gregorovitch. Gregorovitch is saying, I don't have it. It was stolen from me.
If it helps, I've just started to call him Greg in my notes.
Greg is saying, yeah, but that's confusing with Greg. Vinny and Greg.
Oh, God, yeah. It's our second. It's Greg's. There's Greg's, Hannah.
Greg's.
There is multiple Greg. There's Greg's.
Does this mean we can buy a Greg's on the podcast account?
Yes.
Yes.
Let's go get Greg's.
Do you have a Greg's near you?
It's quite, yeah, it's maybe like a 15-minute walk, though.
Cracks.
But I think they're like, aren't they shut right now? Because they're having loads of issues with the car payments.
What are you talking about?
I'm pretty sure, like, it's just, have I? Is this She's a dream the about Greg's? Greg's
news updates.
Yes, as I fucking should be. Yeah, watchdog assessing McDonald's and Greg's IT failures. Urgent review launched into payment failures at Sainsbury's and Greg's. Greg's shops reopen after payment problems fixed. I fucking told you so.
Well, they reopened.
If there's one news I'm up to date with, it's the status of Greg's payments.
You should be. So he sees Voldemort torturing Greg. Greg 2. But then we...
Greg 2 electric boogaloo.
Yes. We go into Greg 2's eyes. And this really confused me as a child that I don't think is explained enough. Harry's having a vision that then goes into a memory. So we're having like a vision in a vision.
The fuck it going into Tim's eyes is so written for the films.
Oh God, yeah. But I feel that that level of hit you over the head with it is actually needed because I was still confused as a child that we're going into a memory in a vision. Like yeah, there's a lot going on here.
I got really confused in this bit, even though like I knew it and the context was there for some reason.
The context.
Yeah. I really momentarily completely forgot that Gregorovitch and what's his name?
Grindelwald
would... It's the G's.
The G's.
I forgot that they were different characters for a good moment.
That's fine.
So when it was like, oh, and Harry really recognised the young, smiling lad, that, and I was like, but who was that lad? I was like, but it couldn't be, surely even when he was younger, he would recognise Dumbledore. I really sat there for about 5 minutes, like, wait, why can I not remember? And then I was like, different G's. Old Greggy and old Grindley are different people. Why did she give them G names?
This book is confusing to children. Like, I'm not going to lie. This book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I recently read the Way of Kings series by Brandon Sanderson, and there's so many names in that that are, like, so fucking similar, especially within the same families. And you're like, okay.
All fantasy books should have the thing at the back that Game of Thrones does. Oh, but listening, that doesn't help you. Yeah. So when I read all of Game of Thrones, obviously Game of Thrones, and this used to... So
I physically read the Game of Thrones.
I ended up having to, like, fold down the page where the maps, yeah, index and family tree was, because it would annoy me thinking I had more than I did. Yeah. But it was so helpful because all the names are so similar.
Yeah. But, and maybe the physical books do have, but yeah, like audio booking it. And whilst I do understand, okay, it's in a family, it makes sense they have like similar names. It can be a family tradition. I'm like, I understand from world building point of view, but from a reader, when it's all like... I can't even remember any of their names now, but it's all like A names that rhyme. I'm like, oh God. And there's like 50 different characters. I'm like sweating. Like, who's who? What's going on? And also the fact that the like old dead king in that series is called Gavilar.
Gavilar.
Which only makes me think of Gavin and Stacey. Gavilar. You're right, Gavilar.
You're right, Gavilar.
So every time the audiobook was like, King, poor dead King Gavilar, I'm like, Gavilar.
Gavilar.
It's exactly what Brandon Sanderson intended.
Once again, you haven't watched Gavin and Stacey. That's your homework. You don't understand us.
No.
Until you've watched Gavin and Stacey.
Yeah.
Ignore some of the offensive jokes. It was 50.
It's fine. Ignore what happened on the fishing trip.
So Harry sees is a young...
Also, ignore James Corden. This was when he was watchable. That's
watchable
really
and talented. He wrote it, for God's sake.
Yeah, like, it's, forgive the James Corden. It was free him.
We all loved him becoming back a cretin. He was so talented.
He was a national treasure. You still haven't seen the History Boys, have you?
No.
Oh, so good.
So Harry sees a young lad.
We actually, sorry, I just remembered we mentioned James Corden a few episodes ago. I can't remember. Someone messaged or replied to the episode as something. Someone basically was like, you should have had a James Corden content warning. And I'm like, it's the truest feedback we've ever had. So yeah, let's put a James Corden content warning.
What, in the description?
In the fucking title.
Content.
I'm going to put it before the EP number. The first thing in the title. James.
Please, if you put it before the EP number, I'll have a breakdown.
Okay.
I'll go in and change it.
Okay.
And change it. Anyway, so what Harry sees is a young Grigorovich watching as a young lad is sitting in his window.
Can you please speak Northern for the rest of the episode, please?
A young lad sitting in his window, and the lad has something
you're
in
like,
his
you
hands.
You can do accents.
I can't.
Like, you can better... The thing is, if I'm alone in my room, I can, like, vaguely do an accent. The moment anyone is perceiving me, I'm like, blah, blah, blah. Actually, that did quite sound a bit
like,
northern.
I can do it for, like, one line and then it will turn Indian. All English people trying to do an accent will turn it. No, everyone English, if they can't do an accent, it will turn Indian. And I don't know why. You know I'm right.
Yeah.
It's English people's default and I don't know why.
It's the colonisation that runs through our veins.
We feel it. So this is the episode where we're going to be cancelled. Anyway, so he sees a young lad on a window and the guy has something in his hand. He laughs.
You're not being northern.
He laughs. Jesus, what a... He shoots a stunner.
I laughed and threw my head back so much.
He laughs and shoots a stunner and jumps out of the window. Harry wakes up and Hermione is like, what's going on? And Harry's like, it was a dream. And Hermione's like, you're a fucking liar and a terrible one at that.
Yeah. So, but also, I think she's being unnecessarily bitchy about this.
She's so unnecessarily bitchy about the visions. She's like, if you were better at occlumency, it's like, also, man's a horcrux. I know she doesn't know this, but he can't help it.
I feel like she does know this at this point. I think she's worked it out and she's denying it.
So this is an interesting addition to the films. Because in the books, there is no contextual information that Hermione works out Harry is a horcrux. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. In the films, they add in the fact that Hermione has worked it out. Mm. They add in this like moment of context. And I find that really interesting because I do really like it, but there's no evidence of it in the books.
Yeah, I like to think purely in terms of headcanon. I'm not saying that there's the it's not on the page, but in terms of headcanon, I like to think, you know, when you have a thought about something and it's such a horrible fleeting thought that you're like, no, and then you refuse to think, digest, blah, blah. I think she's had that. I think it has briefly, don't give free foot on the internet.
We did in our last episode. Have you not proofwatched
it
yet?
I'm not. Yeah, that's on my list for tomorrow. But you, I thought you were going to blur it. Did you not blur it?
No, I cut it the moment we take our socks off.
Oh, yeah.
I literally, it took me so long. I cut it the moment.
Frame to frame.
Yeah, I was actually like, what amount of foot?
What amount of free foot? Yeah. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, 70% is the, so yeah, the toes is that extra 30% you don't want to. Yeah, anyway, completely forgot. Yeah, basically, I think that she's kind of, it's fleetingly gone. Harry could be.
Yeah.
And entirely subconsciously, this has not reached the front of her brain at all. But she's had that subconscious gut reaction of, nope, too horrible.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. The moment Harry then, like, it's revealed at the end, I feel like, is when she's like, I knew that.
Yeah, I agree. I'd agree with that. I actually really like that they added that into the film. It was another nail in the coffin of them shitting on Ron's character so hard and adding all this Harry and Hermione stuff, but I do like that they added that.
Yeah, but I definitely think it's important. I think if Hermione knew, if she consciously knew, she would have said something. I do not believe that Hermione would have kept that.
No, I agree that it's like this subconscious of mine little like itch that she's like, no.
Yeah. It would have been interesting to see her battle the for the greater good argument if she had realized, but ultimately I don't think that it's something that needs to be in there. And I do think that Hermione would have told him.
Yeah. But I do think that Harry being a Horcrux means that, yeah, Hermione's completely unfair in her criticisms, because Harry actually, I don't think, can apply proper occlumency. This is a form of magic that no one's ever experienced before.
Which I like, because I always think that it made no sense that he was so good at throwing off the...
Yes, I agree. And so bad at throwing off the Imperius curse and so bad. I agree, because it should be the same kind
of magic. So I quite like that it's this idea that it's because he's a Horcrux, because I feel that it goes to explain that. Because, yeah, to me, that feels like the same strain of magic.
And he's proven that when real occlumency is done to him, when he was in front of Voldemort in the graveyard, he could kind of use legilimency. So he does have the skill set. This is something else. I like that.
But Harry is the problem for falling asleep when he's on watch. That is the issue.
He's not asleep. He has a vision so strong that he passes out.
He lies
and says he falls asleep.
He's asleep. But also, I really love that. But he thinks of old Greg. Let's call him old Greg.
Old Greg and young Greg.
Like the Mighty Boosh. You know old Greg from... Old Greg. I want to drink Baileys from a shoe. We've not seen the Mighty Boosh. Okay, I'll show you that in a bit.
Isn't the Mighty Boosh the one where it says... It actually has the line about a goblet of wine, because you made a TikTok about it.
Maybe it does. Yeah, that rings a bell.
You made, one of the first TikToks you made was you realised the Mighty Boosh had a line about goblet of wine.
Let's go see.
It's a fun journey for all of us. Your screen is so fucking cracked.
I had noticed, actually. I can scroll. My God, woman.
I remember what you were wearing. That one.
It's not really a goblet, is it?
Here, let me start to get again here.
You should have a goblet of wine. It's not really a goblet, is it? It's sort of a tennis ball cut in half.
I'm really sad that didn't take off as a sound, because it fits so perfectly.
Let me hang
on. Did anyone else make a video to that?
I don't know. What's it? I'm just going to show Hannah old Greg now. If you've not seen The Mighty Beach, it's aged... like milk.
What comedy? There are some comedies.
There's
that
blackface. There's quite a lot of blackface.
That's age like.
Yeah, but the bits that haven't, that have aged well, like if you like surrealist, aged like milk. I hope that explains so much about my personality and sense of humour.
Explains why when your reaction to the BBC asking why you're Slytherin is your first thought that enters through your head is to go, I'm a racist.
Yeah, the BBC, when we were on the radio this morning, like, what houses are you? And then they were like,
She was clearly trying to claw it back from us both going, J.K. Rowling is transphobic.
Yeah, she was like, what house? I said, she's like, why Slytherin? And my brain just went, say you're racist. That's a joke. Say you're racist. And then I was like, you're on the BBC.
You're on the BBC.
You're on the BBC. Like, on Goblet of Wine.
On the BBC.
I can reply to that saying I'm racist, because people know that I'm not.
It's entirely different in a 10-minute segment on the BBC.
Yeah. And I didn't say it, thank God. But so I really just sat there going, don't say you're racist. Don't say you're racist. Don't say you're racist.
But we did say J.K. Rowling was transphobic and got a correction. I'm going to put on my CV, once got a correction from the BBC.
And it's not even a correction. It's a we're covering our asses for legal. Yeah. It's not a correction.
It's in case she
sues
them.
Because she is fucking trans.
It's entirely in case she sues. Did you see the Mother's Day tweet?
Which one?
The one she did on this Mother's Day. Just gone.
What did it say?
I didn't read the full thing because the preview I saw made me so angry, but it was like, Happy Mother's Day, or should I say?
Oh, God.
And then a stream of not even transphobic, sexist shit of just like, oh, I'm sorry. Do we not celebrate Mother's Day if you have two dads? If you have a dad, a single dad that raised you, it's so transparently transphobic where I was like, Jesus.
And it's not even at this point, and this is the thing, she's at this point, it's not even, obviously the transphobia is enough to be like, no, but she is aligning herself with the alt-right, with literal
Nazis. It was so
alt-right.
Yeah.
Like she was,
the one tweet she did on Mother's Day was to pull down anyone who wants to celebrate anyone that isn't essentially a white cis straight woman. On Mother's Day. It was so disgusting. Like, I didn't read the full thing because I didn't want to, but I saw a preview of it and I was just like, is this the most you have to say? You're a mother. I know, you might be a grandmother at this point, and this is how you're spending your fucking Mother's Day.
It's
a sad piece of shit.
It's genuine, like, it's fucking heartbreaking. It's, and I'm not saying this to defend, but like, she's being brainwashed. Yeah. It's like, it's interesting to see the slippery slope. It's gone from, oh, she's liked a couple of tweets, to then fully Mumsnet brainwashing. That's now gone beyond the transphobia, which, whilst obviously I don't want this to come across like I'm saying that transphobia is obviously not fine, you know enough about me, but I feel like transphobia is like the entryway bigotry in that it's seen as the most acceptable.
Yeah, that's
I'm massive air quoting for anyone on. It's seen as the acceptable bigotry, and she's now started with the starter bigotry and is now fully going alt-right, aligning herself with like neo-Nazis, with extreme misogynists. Like, the people that she is defending and donating to are now people with straight up Nazi, horrendously racist stuff, very publicly on their Twitter, publicly on things that they've said in their court cases and things. And these are the people that she is publicly defending, publicly donating to, publicly aligning herself with. And it's gone. Even if you should be against her for the transphobia, but even if you're a bigot that hates trans people, I mean, one, fuck off and stop listening. But like, two, even you at this point should be like, she is hating anyone, but anyone at this point, because I feel like to say anyone that is a white, cis, straight, if you're a cis woman menstruating, like, blah, blah, I feel like the amount of like, bullet points you have to do on one hand, neurotypical, you get to so many bullet points where you're like, this is such a small percentage of the population.
Yeah,
do these people exist?
Yeah.
Like, it's just
I feel bad brain for gymnastics.
Her. Obviously I feel more bad for the people that she's victimizing, but I do genuinely feel bad for her, because I think that this is mental illness and this is brainwashing.
Yeah.
And it's really sad to see her end this way, but also there are so many people with mental health issues that don't become massive fucking bigots.
Yeah. It's tragic. It's...
Yes.
I've got to disengage with it because it makes me so angry, but we're very also privileged to be able to disengage with it.
Acknowledging that Mighty Boosh was very funny back in the day, but there's a lot of it that was straight up not okay. Yeah, that clip had a bit of mangina, which... I mean, it wasn't necessarily in a negative light. It was very shiny.
That's Noel Fielding seems like a lovely bloke these days.
The show I just started watching had a girl join an MLM that was teeth whitening gummies, and they made her mouth so white that it bleached her entire insides, and then she was wearing a skirt with no underwear and it started to shine out her vagina.
Do you know a fact I learned from... This is so off topic.
Is this going to be about, like, teeth and vaginas?
Bones.
Yeah.
You know a fact I learned from a crime drama? So they managed to ID someone on a crime drama. This was one of the plot points, by the fact she had yellow bones. She had yellow bones because she'd been taking acne medication.
Yeah.
It was the same acne medication I was taking at the time I watched the crime drama. And I then turned to my mum and then went to my doctor and I was like, is this turning my bones yellow? And he was like, yeah, sorry, did we not tell you that? And it can do it for life. That was the other thing that came up in this crime drama. I was like, do I have yellow bones because of this acne medication?
Give me 5 minutes and a knife and I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's some of the things about acne medication.
I like to think your bones are the same colour as your hair right now.
That's okay. My hair's pretty.
So, anyway.
No, Harry explains.
Did I say about Father Christmas?
No.
He says that Greg, old Greg, looks like a trussed up Father Christmas. I really appreciate that. That really made me laugh.
Harry explains the vision to Ron because Hermione doesn't want to hear it. So they're whispering in bed.
Ron wants the tea.
Ron wants the tea. And Harry is confused because he assumed Voldemort wanted Gregorovitch to make him another wand.
Greg.
But that clearly isn't the case. Clearly Voldemort wants something else because he's killed old Greg now.
They're discussing R.I.P. old Greg.
What else could he have wanted? He wants whatever the young lad stole. What else could he have stolen? Is there something else to look for? And why does the young...
This is a start off that is there something else to look for?
This book has a lot of MacGuffins. This book is a book of MacGuffins.
It is. We literally had this conversation with Nikita and Ken, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah. So Harry falls asleep thinking of the young lad's face. And he says it has a merriness like Fred and George's. And then he falls asleep. Dum, dum, dum. We have a question.
We haven't had one in a while.
We love a question. I know. This question comes from Anthony. Anthony, the same trickster who wanted us to drink dirt. Anthony says, what would you see if you looked in the mirror of Erised? Has this remained consistent Ooh. Over your life? Has it changed as you've grown up? If this is too personal for the podcast, I can ask. I can think of something else.
How has no one asked this?
That's a great question, but I don't think I have an answer.
Give me 5 minutes and I will. My answer's serotonin.
Yeah.
Just unlimited supplies of serotonin. You know what? This has got me thinking that I feel like we're socialized to not like publicly want for things.
But it's not just want, it's the deepest, darkest desire of your heart. And do you know what? There are definitely times in my life when I would have seen things. But I was somewhere socially recently. I was at someone I knew reasonably well's 30th birthday party. And I saw someone I haven't seen in like 6 months. And they were like, how are you? Now, the British way to answer how are you is either I'm fine, how are you? Or when they ask the longer question, how are you? What's been going on? They actually want an answer. You start listing some of your miseries.
Oh, God, yeah. You can't say you're okay.
I thought in my head I must list some of my miseries. And then I stood there and thought, but I'm not. I know.
How dare you? Be unhappy, Hannah. Don't make the rest of us look bad.
And genuinely at this point in my life, and as I was explaining to this person, everything's pretty good. Sure, there are like some things that could be better, but I'm genuinely really happy and I'm
that's horrible. Please stop it.
I'm good.
No, not acceptable.
Okay.
No, stop it. There are times in my life when I've very brief times when I've had that, and when everything is, this is really horrific, and this definitely meant when it's in it, but I don't like when I'm all good and everything's good, because it fills me with utter fear and dread, because I know something's gonna go wrong.
Yeah.
And this is mental illness, but I can think of like literally maybe two times in my life when I've been like, actually all boxes ticked, I'm all good. And all I have felt is like the most intense, sickening anxiety for life can't be like this. Something bad's going to happen. I'm really brain healthy, guys. But good for you. I'm really happy to hear that. But there's still, you know, what do you want a one night stand with Martin Freeman? Is that what you're seeing in the mirror of Erised?
No, I think, okay, if I'd looked in the mirror of Erised at like 14, I would have seen myself with like a boyfriend, because I was like so
had
a
male approval.
I'd never had a boyfriend until I was 17, and I used to be so conscious that I didn't even have one of those like
situationships,
one of those primary school fake boyfriends, none of that. So I thought I was an urchin who was unlovable. And
yeah, you are.
Genuinely, each Christmas and New Year I used to be like, this is the year I'm gonna have a boyfriend, this is the year. So I think I would have seen a boyfriend for myself until I was like 17. I think there was a long time when I would have seen a job that I enjoyed and was comfortable in.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you have that now?
Yeah. Obviously, nothing's perfect. But yeah.
That's good.
I enjoy it. I earn an amount of money where I'm more than comfortable. I'm able to make frivolous purchases sometimes, which is an extremely privileged position to be in. And I'm not afraid I'm going to be fired or screamed at every day. I'm sometimes so stressed that I don't look up from my computer, but that's a very privileged, lucky position to be in, even that. So,
yeah. Yeah. I'm like struggling with this.
I want more time. Can you look at time in the mirror, Vera said?
Yeah.
Time to do more things. There are things I enjoy I don't have enough time for.
Because I know what I want, but it feels like it's something that you can't physically see in a mirror.
Mm.
Like, I want, like, stability in terms of emotions, in terms of, like, money, in terms of lifestyle, in terms of friends, in terms of family, in terms of, like, I want just overall stability. But you can't look in the mirror of Erised and see that. Like, I just want to know that, like, everything is good and nothing's going to change. I don't know how you see that aside from looking particularly well rested.
And also, the only constant in life is change.
As someone that particularly...
Why is that frozen? Oh, no, it hasn't.
As someone that there's nothing I hate more and stresses me out more than change. I'm going through at least two massive life changes right now.
You've decided to do those both at once.
Yeah, one of them is getting a new housemate and then there's another. So there's two massive life changes and I'm like, yeah, I'm so glad that these lined up together. Anyway, yeah, thank you for the question. That mine's stability and Hannah's is...
Right now, maybe mine's socks. More books. A home... library with the wheelie.
Oh yeah, I'm changing my answer. It's the wheelie ladder.
It's the wheelie ladder.
I don't care about stability in every area of my life. I just want the wheelie library ladder.
When I dream of my life, I'll be unhappy if I don't have a wheelie library ladder.
Or alternatively, every area of your life could be shit, but if you have the wheelie library ladder, you're all good.
Yep. Thanks for the question, Anthony. That's the end of the episode. Look how well we can make a short.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of tangents. And this is the thing. I feel like when there's a chapter with not a huge amount in it, I just get more tempted to make tangents.
Yeah.
But I do feel like those were all very amusing tangents, especially the cows. Outro bit.
You have to say bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine. If you want to follow us around the internet, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok under Goblet of Wine Podcast. Or if you'd like to support us further, you can find us on Patreon, where you can get access to bonus episodes, our Discord, and loads more perks.
Thank you so much to our Hufflepuff tier patrons for helping us produce these episodes.
Yolanda, Sia, Sir Bandersnatch, Samuel, Samira, Michael, Kylie, Jasmine, Florian, and Ardent.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and as always, fuck JK Rowling and the TERFs.
Bye!